Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White, and today is the big day. This is it, Election Day 2020. You have lots of choices for President of the United States, including two major party candidates that will define the direction of the nation for the next 4 years, Democrat and former Vice President Joe Biden and Republican President Donald Trump. The choice is yours, and if you haven't done so already, there is still time, even if you're not registered yet in California. At this hour, we're talking about the process, and we're talking about the possibilities. Joining us now is longtime political journalist and host of the Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, also longtime Insight analyst, Ken Rudin. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Randall.
Also joining us is Vice President of Political Data, Inc. and political strategist Paul Mitchell. His company is a bipartisan voter data company, and he collects voter information from all 58 California counties and provides the analytics to both the Democratic and Republican parties. And it's nice to have you back on Insight as well, Paul.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This is your big day, right?
It is. I've been hunkered down here.
So the early vote, as we know it, was heavily Democratic. Lots of Republicans expected to turn out today. Dive into that a little bit for us.
Yeah. So we saw a really strange phenomenon this election cycle, and that's that generally in past elections, Republicans overperform their registration by about 10 points in the early vote. You can think of the early voters are mostly homeowners, they're mostly in suburban areas, they're mostly older. Those are the types of voters who really gravitated towards voting by mail over the past couple decades. This election cycle, oddly, it was Democrats that were coming out quicker and returning their ballots immediately. And it was almost like this virtue signaling thing where Democrats were getting out, taking pictures of themselves at the drop box and making a statement by voting early. Republicans were doing the opposite. In pre-election polling and then in the data that we see coming in, Republicans are essentially voicing that they want to vote in person at the polling place and largely on election day. We can actually see in some counties the split between those voters who have cast their ballots in person over the last couple of days and those who voted early. And Republicans have doubled their turnout among those in-person votes. So it creates opportunities and challenges. Democrats have an opportunity that they kind of have a lead. You know, it's like if you're watching a stage of the Tour de France and there's two guys like 3 miles ahead of the peloton, that is where Democrats are right now. But Republicans are in the in-person vote catching up. The challenge is for them that, you know, their votes aren't banked. Their votes are still coming. And if they have a sick kid or if they leave their ballot at home or if there's a long line, we could see their participation drop. And it could impact a lot of races, not just here in California, but around the country where we're seeing this same phenomenon.
Yeah, in those close races, it really could mean the difference, right? But then if Democratic voters popped their, you know, ballot in the mail just a couple of days ago and it lags getting there in some states like Pennsylvania, for instance, that could end up being a problem for the Democrats.
Well, what's interesting is there's two things. There's the real potential impact of a ballot getting to the registrar's office late and potentially not being counted, right? There's also this impact that's really interesting about our experience we're going to have tonight in watching the votes come in. If we're watching California votes come in California, county registrars have been processing those by mail ballots from 29 days before the election until now. And so we're going to see at 8 o'clock, as soon as the polls close, this huge surge of votes that are representative of those early Democratic leaning ballots. And then later through the night, we're going to see the votes of those poll voting more Republican ballots. In other states, we'll see the opposite. In Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, they are by law required to not even touch those by mail ballots until after the polls close. So they're going to be reporting their poll votes that skew more Republican first, and then later tonight, tomorrow, next week, counting those early votes. So there's real implications of this kind of mechanics of how people vote. And there's also going to be, for us viewing the election and watching the results, real implications as to what those numbers mean when they first come out. And the numbers we see at 8 o'clock might not be representative in either case of the actual final vote.
Yeah, patience is the term I keep hearing over and over again. Ken, that second scenario, it's been called the Red Mirage, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's very interesting. Just as so many Republicans refuse to wear masks because the president said, well, you don't have to wear a mask. So many, as Paul mentioned, so many of them did not vote, would not vote early because the president said, do not vote early, do not vote by mail, even though, of course, the president himself voted by absentee with, you know, to send his vote to Florida. But the fact is it's very possible that his peevishness or whatever with the early voting system and the demand for early votes because of the virus could come back to hurt the Republican Party. And, you know, as Paul mentions, they only have, if those who are waiting for election day, they only have one day to cast their vote. For many, many states, not all the states, but many states, they had plenty of days. I mean, when I voted in Maryland a week or so ago, there was still over an hour line. I mean, it's not that, you know, it was easy to vote without it. People were just out and about to vote. So I know the polls showed very close. I know that, you know, in some of the key states like Pennsylvania, like Florida, Iowa, for example, North Carolina, it's within a point or two. But if anecdotally, if you look at the people who've been waiting in line for days and days and days, it seems to be a good news for Biden. But of course, we've been surprised before.
And go ahead, Paul.
I'll just play right off of what Ken's saying, because he's absolutely right. There's this reality of what we talked about and how people are voting and why. But there's also essentially, this was maybe a strategic choice and probably not a wise strategic choice. You know, stores have their Black Friday sales the day after Thanksgiving. And why do they do that? Because the money in the bank is money in the bank. They don't have their big Christmas sale on Christmas Eve, when you might have like people showing up at your house and like different things happening and a car breaks down or there's a long line. And so you don't end up going and buying your big Christmas sale products. So that's like what it's like with voting. The strategic choice to say, don't vote with that ballot you've had for a month. That's easy. Don't put that in the mail. Leave it on your kitchen counter for a month. And then on this one particular day, during this one particular 12 or 13 hour window, go to this one particular place and stand in line. And then there's going to be people with like masks on and all the PPE. And you're going to go do this socially distanced voting. It's probably not a really fun experience. But strategically, I don't know why you would say like, let's push our voters to vote in narrower window in the middle of a pandemic, rather than let's push our voters to vote over a month-long period by mail or at their local Dropbox. So we might see, or we might be having a conversation in a few days or a few weeks of like, wow, that was really catastrophic.
So despite all of the calls for us to be patient, we're going to be in front of the TV or radio listening to the results as they come in tonight. And 270 is the big number that's important, electoral votes, Ken. So walk us through which states to watch first and why.
Well, clearly there are some states that are just too close to call. And of course, even though New York Times and other reputable pollsters have shown Joe Biden with a slight lead, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Iowa are just so tight right now. And that's why both candidates are spending so much money. You know, we talked about how Florida decided the election in 2000, and it certainly did. Ohio, if John Kerry had gotten 60,000 more votes in Ohio in 2004, he would have beaten President Bush. Ohio made the case or decided the election in 2004. Now it's a few states. I think Pennsylvania and Florida among them. Tons of money is being poured in there. And you know, something in the old days, I mean, I remember like 1980, for example, I remember watching the polls close and the networks were easy. This is one cycle before I came to ABC News. But I mean, I was watching the networks call the races as the polls were closing. And so for example, in 1980, when Ronald Reagan beat President Carter easily in Indiana. When Dan Quayle upset Birch Bayh, you knew there was a big Republican wave about to happen because the races were called early. I suspect that in many of the large states, including Pennsylvania, including Florida, but others as well, there will be no states being called winners throughout Tuesday, and maybe not even Wednesday or Thursday as well. So one of President Trump's arguments is that whoever's leading after the seventh inning deserves to win. Whoever's leading on Tuesday night, that's it. You shouldn't count the votes beyond Tuesday. And that's crazy. I mean, you think of all the things that's happened in history, and I always think of, like, for example, early votes in 1982 in California, for example. Tom Bradley running for governor was the winner if you looked at the early votes. And then all these absentee votes came in for George Dukmejian, and Dukmejian was the winner. So, you know, there's a lot of things other than just what you see, what the TVs report early in the evening. One thing I don't want to see, and this is what drives me nuts, I remember, I think 2 years ago or 4 years ago, or maybe every year, Wolf Blitzer on CNN would say, with 0.1% of the vote in, John Smith has 90 votes, but Mary Smith has 50 votes.
Right, yeah.
What is that? And so hopefully the political junkies out there and the people who are watching the results will be more patient.
Ken, briefly, can you talk a little bit about Texas that has recently moved from lean Republican to a toss-up?
That is remarkable, and I think it's real because I've seen John Cornyn, the senator who's up for re-election this year, has said it's really, really close. We've talked about this for at least 4 years ago because I remember Hillary Clinton making a move in Texas and people saying, why are you doing that? Well, there are demographic changes happening in Texas. I don't know if it happened in 2020, but when we saw that Beto O'Rourke, who ran for the Senate in Texas in 2018 against Ted Cruz, came far closer than anyone thought. Things are there. You know, this is, I used to say for the longest time, this is not your father's Lyndon Johnson or Lloyd Benson, Texas. This is solidly Republican. But that solid Republican is not the same as it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's changing rapidly. I don't know if it's enough for it to turn blue, but the fact that Republicans are nervous about Texas says a lot about tonight.
Or Ann Richards. They had a Democratic governor as well.
Who lasted one term, right?
Right. So, Paul, you focus much more on California, and Cap Radio will not be doing the, 80% of precincts reporting type of thing tonight. But
sure.
What does that mean when you see 100% of precincts reporting? That doesn't mean all the votes are in.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an arcane measure that they used to use back when, all the tabulation of votes was coming in from precincts. And not only would you be able to, back in the days, you know, when I first started doing this in the 90s, you would be seeing how many precincts had reported, and then you'd be like trying to figure out which precincts had come in. You know, in places like LA County, they literally have helicopters that would fly out to Palmdale and get ballots and fly back. And so there's always this game of results going up and down based on geographically where those precincts were. They still have that little ticker, and it's really, I don't even understand why. I think it might just be, a legacy thing, but it can confuse voters when, say, tonight, I would guess that the quote unquote 801s, which are the polls close at 8, so theoretically the counties at 801 can start posting results. And that really happens between like maybe 8 and 9 o'clock. And I would expect that voters or, your listeners are going to see 12 million ballots counted, 0% precincts reported. And so what that means is 12 million ballots that have come in over the last 29 days have been tabulated. And here's who's winning among those early voters. But we haven't yet started collecting and counting those ballots that were cast locally at each of the polling centers and voting centers. And so in normal elections, it's a little bit more parity between how many of these votes are cast vote by mail and how many are done in person. This election cycle, I think there's going to be a huge lopsided thing. Like we might have only, 15% of our vote coming from people who are voting in person, maybe less. And so that 0%, 5%, 20% reporting shouldn't be seen as this is how close we are to being done. We might be 70% done and still have a thing that says, you know, 5% reporting.
Paul, just briefly, are there any pockets of California where we're not seeing much voting taking place? Pre-voting?
Actually, there's been a lot lower turnout in some of the more rural counties, Central Valley, San Bernardino. Some parts of the state, like with a lot of affluent homeowner, more white populations like Marin or Santa Monica or Newport, or, you know, 60%+ turnout already. And then others might only be 25-30% turnout, like San Bernardino or maybe parts of the Central Valley.
Mm. That is Vice President of Political Data, Inc. and a political strategist, Paul Mitchell. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Ken Rudin, Political Junkie podcast host and longtime Insight analyst. Thank you as well this morning.
Randall, thank you.
And we'll chat with you again, both of you, again tomorrow morning when we start to get some of those results in that we've been talking about.
Yeah, we'll look back and say we were so silly what we thought yesterday.
Right.
We were so naive.
Up next, we check in live with a few Cap Radio reporters who are at various polling locations in the Sacramento region. We'll also take a closer look at how climate change is a deciding factor for many voters this year. Later, a top elections expert joins us live to answer your questions. Did you wait until today to vote? What concerns you most about the day ahead? What excites you most? Shoot us an email to insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. It is Election Day, and you're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. And today we're navigating Election Day in its entirety. Nearly 100 million American voters cast early ballots, and that includes more than 70% of Nevada's registered voters, and a record 11 million ballots have been accepted so far in California. That early turnout will give us early results in California and Nevada, but that's not so much the case in some critical battleground states where the counting process cannot even begin until after the polls close tonight. The environment and climate change is a key consideration for many voters this election cycle, and it could still be a deciding factor today if you have not yet cast your ballot. Cap Radio's environment reporter Ezra David Romero recently wrote about how climate change policy is steering voters this election, and Ezra joins us now live. Ezra, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Randall.
So first off, where are you? Are you still at Golden One Center?
No, I'm at the Clara Auditorium in Midtown. I went to the Golden One Center this morning where people were voting at 7 a.m., and then I went to the Secretary of State office where people are voting as well, and now I'm here in Midtown Sacramento.
And what's the overall vibe that you're getting?
It seems like there's a lot of people dropping off their ballots, and I've noticed a lot of people coming with their kids, whether they're of age to vote or underage, to witness the voting process. I spoke to a woman named Norma Greathouse. She was there with four other people. Three of them were her daughters, and one was a granddaughter, and for three of them was their first time ever voting, and they were going over their ballots together. And then they all went inside and voted. Here's Norma.
These three are first-time voters.
Awesome. Why did you bring them all together in this way?
Because we wanted to go over everything as a family and make sure we all understood all the propositions and everything.
Awesome. Why come today to drop it off in person rather than send it in the mail?
Well, for the first-time voters, we're not dropping anything off. They want to actually vote. They want to get that experience, and I want them to have that experience because it's very important.
Yeah, And so Norma was one of many, many moms that I met this morning bringing their kids in. And then I also met people that were voted really early in the morning because they were afraid that tension might break out later in the day. You know, you've heard reports in media and social media they talked about. So Jocasia Haley, she mentioned that she was scared of potential violence tonight.
I've been watching the news. I've been on, like, social media, and it said that it was going to be, like, crazy today and, like, you know, protect yourself and everything. So that was kind of a worry for me because I didn't want anything to happen while I'm here because I'm not a violent person. I'm not that kind of person. Things scare me. So that was kind of the thing to me being up early as well. So maybe I can, like, not have to deal with all that later in the night if that happens.
Sure.
Because that's a scary thought as well.
Yeah, Jocasia said she was scared, but then she also felt really hopeful that maybe some change could come this election, in her words.
Mm-hmm. Ezra, did you get the sense that Jocasia is an outlier or that she shares the opinion of other voters who were turning out early this morning?
She was the only person who told me that this morning. So she could be an outlier with this group of people that voted this morning. But in Sacramento County, where more than half of people have already voted, there's a lot of people who voted early who won't go to the polls at all today.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any storefronts that are being protected against any potential violence in San Francisco's Union Square, Beverly Hills, Rodeo Drive, and other locations throughout the country? Store owners are getting out in front of this and boarding up their windows. I haven't heard any reports out of Sacramento yet, and since you've been sort of in the downtown core there, I was wondering if you see any of that sort of activity.
I'm not seeing anyone actively doing it, but there are buildings that do have boards on them, you know, sort of remnants of protests in the past. But, I mean, others have put them up in the past few days as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Ezra, you are our environment reporter, and I'm wondering, how might climate change and the future of our environment factor into who people vote for in this cycle?
Yeah, I recently wrote a story just about that, and I spoke to voters who say climate change was their number one issue when thinking about who to vote for. I spoke to a woman named Lori McMahon from Reading. You know, she's a young climate activist. And basically they're saying that four more years with the Trump administration in office would mean more and more rollbacks of environmental regulations that have, or pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, things like that. They think those kind of decisions will keep on moving forward if the Trump administration goes and stays in power. And, you know, the Biden administration that has said he'll spend $1.7 trillion on decarbonizing America by 2050. They want to, like, go back into the Paris Climate Agreement and all those kind of things. So they're very different presidents when it comes to potential presidents when they come to climate change. So I'd say there's a lot at risk there, according to the voters that I talked to. And one 18-year-old voter that I spoke to this morning, she voted for the first time. And when I asked her about climate change, this is what she said. Her name's Ariel Michelle.
As far as climate change, you know, obviously I believe in it. I think it's real. When Trump first got into office, a lot of websites that had talked about climate change were shut down. So any project that I had on climate change, a lot of resources were just down. So I really hope that they can go back up, and with this hopefully new vote, maybe he changes his mind if he's put in office, or if someone else is put in office, it can, you know, go back up, because it really needs us to be solved, or at least taken a step further to being solved.
Yes, I've heard from youth, I've heard from scientists, I've heard from other journalists that cover climate change that four more years of a Trump administration could be detrimental for climate change and would take years and years and maybe even decades to reverse. But if Vice President Biden goes into office, they feel like some of those actions the president has rolled back could be rolled forward.
Yeah. Ezra, we live in a country right now that seems to be divided on every topic. But you did write that a Pew Research Center survey from August shows nearly 70%. It's hard to get the country to agree on anything. 70% thinks climate change is an important issue when picking a president. I found that number really impressive.
Yeah, it was something like 68-69% of all Americans thought it was either important or very important that there's climate change is a major topic, but I was also told by that, by Pew, that Trump supporters, you know, climate change ranks the last in importance of 12 issues, and that no more than 2 in 10 Trump voters put high importance on climate change, when it was almost the opposite for Biden supporters. So there still is that dichotomy, that difference. But altogether, there's a high number of people that believe in climate change and would like the whatever president is in office, you know, to focus on that.
All right. Well. Cap Radio's environment reporter Ezra David Romero out at the polls this morning. Thank you so much for joining us, Ezra.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's now hear from Cap Radio's race and equity reporter, Sarah Mises-Tan. She's out right now at the Pinnell Center in District 8. Sarah, welcome back to Insight.
Hey, Randall, it's great to be here. And actually, I guess I would offer a small correction, which is that I'm no longer at the Pinnell Center. I'm actually at the Colonial Heights Library.
Oh, you're at the Colonial Heights Library right now. Is that what I understand?
Yes. Yep, yes. I'm out here, and there is a pretty good crowd, actually, which is pretty interesting to see.
Sarah, your phone is hard to pick up for some reason. Is the is it right in front of your mouth?
It is. I am
there, we
masked
go.
Up. I'm going to... Is this any better?
It is a little bit better, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a mask on.
There we go.
But I am, masked up out here, trying to keep a safe social distance from voters, but also trying to ask them a bit about some of their concerns as they go into vote.
Yeah, and what have you seen so far?
I think it's really been interesting. I was at the Pinnell Center earlier this morning, and there was really not a huge crowd, I would say. There were a couple people coming in, a lot of people coming in just to drop their ballots in the physical ballot box that was outside, but not a lot of people actually going in to vote. It is a very different scene here at the Colonial Heights Library. There's a line that's snaking around the building, and poll watcher or people who are volunteering at the polls say that they're expecting that line to only get longer as the day goes on. A lot of people basically have turned out specifically at this location to vote in person, to actually cast their ballot. And I've heard a lot of people at this location in particular say that they're very worried about their vote not being counted for any number of reasons or election fraud. And so they wanted to be here in person to place that in the ballot box.
Wow. Snaking around the building at this hour. We'll see if that maintains throughout the day, right? So you've been following a couple of Sacramento City Council races closely. Can we start with District 2? Can you describe that area of the city for us?
Sure. So, you know, we did a story earlier this week just on District 2 voting patterns. It is a district that historically has not had a lot of voter engagement. So a number of different reasons. It is an underserved area of the city. There are high levels of poverty, but it's also a very diverse area with a lot of people who may not speak English as a first language. And so it's an interesting race, just given that, you know, they don't often get a lot of voter turnout, but it's a contested race. You've got Alan Warren, who's a four-time incumbent. He's been the city council member for District 2 since 2012. And there's a newcomer who's running against him, Steve Lilloe. He's a local business owner in the area. Sean Lilloe has told me that, he's been disappointed in the direction that the district has taken in the past few years. And so he wants to come in and kind of provide that change. And of course, Alan Warren says that he has been providing that change, but that, of course, it takes a little bit of time for that to happen. So that's a really interesting race that we're watching for District 2.
And this is in which part of the city?
This is North Sacramento, so Del Paso Heights, Woodlake, and the Robla neighborhoods, generally speaking.
Okay. And then tell us about District 8.
Yeah, the District 8 race is also an interesting race, representing like the Meadowview and Laguna neighborhoods. We've got Ma Zeng and Liz Simmons. Liz Simmons is an activist and a pastor, well-known in the area, and Mai Vang is also an activist. And I think their race it's kind of two people who are coming at a lot of the issues in Meadowview from a very similar angle, and I think the two of them really do want a lot of very similar things for Meadowview, and they just have slightly different approaches, which is interesting to see. But I've heard obviously a lot of support for Liz Simmons, and obviously also a lot of support for Mai Vang. The interesting thing about Mai Vang is that if she is elected, I know that she is kind of part of this progressive bloc of elected women of color who are looking to bring more progressive change to Sacramento. I know that she has spoken very openly about partnering with incoming Councilwoman Katie Valenzuela if she were to be elected to kind of push for more progressive change at city council. And of course, she would also be the first Asian American female to serve on Sacramento City Council, which is interesting.
Sarah, what would you say is most at stake for both of these districts? Why should the entire electorate be focused on these?
So are you talking about the ballot items or the two races?
The two races, yeah.
You know, I think there is certainly a lot of stake for both. Like, both of these districts are two districts that both all the candidates say have been underserved by the city. They say that the Central City, they've seen a revitalization in the Central City. They've seen a lot of resources go to the Central City, but they haven't seen that trickle-down effect in either District 2 or District 8. And so what I've heard from all the candidates is that they're really hoping to be able to shift city council so that it does provide more attention and more funding, more resources to these two districts. And so I think it's interesting to see who's going to get elected or reelected to these seats, to see how that might shift or change the way that city council allocates money and puts down policy.
Yeah. Sarah Meisestan, Cap Radio's race and equity reporter. Thank you, Sarah. I know you've got a lot of work in front of you for the rest of the day, so we appreciate the little slice of time you were able to give us.
Of course. Thanks so much, Randall.
And now we're joined by Cap Radio healthcare reporter Sammy Kaola, who is at the Carmichael Library. And good morning, Sammy.
Good morning, Randall.
So what are you seeing there in Carmichael?
It is pretty busy here. There is a line stretching from up at the entrance to kind of around the corner of the library. There is a serious traffic control team guiding cars into the lot. They're saying it's like a 30 to 40 minute wait to vote right now, but it looks like that wait time is going to get longer as people show up. And so I've just been talking to voters. There's a real huge age range here. You know, I've talked to voters who are 18 and 20, who are both voting for the first time. I've talked to some people in their 30s and 40s, and there are some elderly people here too. So, you know, leading up to the election, I've been thinking a lot about COVID-19 safety and how people can protect themselves at the polls. And, you know, almost everybody here is wearing a mask. I see one set of people who's not wearing a mask, and I'm actually going to be curious to see when they get up to the front how they're directed to vote. We have some coverage about the fact that, you know, you can't turn people away. You can't turn voters away for not wearing a mask, and so polling places have to find a way to protect others from those who aren't using a face covering. So, yeah, that's my next step here, is to follow them a little bit.
Have you had a chance to ask people why they waited till today, given that we've had weeks to drop off our ballots?
Definitely. People wanted to be here in person. They think it's a, you know, an historic moment. It's important to be here in person. They feel like they're really doing something by coming and voting in person. There's one woman I talked to who was sort of a criminal justice reform advocate, and she came here kind of decked out in a t-shirt and a hat for a nonprofit that she works with to fight over incarceration, particularly in the African-American community. So she really wanted to be out here wearing that. I saw she was, you know, talking to somebody next to her in line about it. So, you know, I think maybe people see it as a chance to just have their voice heard in person.
Mm-hmm. There has been an overwhelming number of Democrats that have voted early, and Republicans have indicated that they'll vote on Election Day. You cannot wear any sort of indication of how you might be voting when you go to the polls, but I'm wondering if you've been able to get a sense of the people that are in line, whether that holds true to what you're seeing.
There is someone in a Make America Great Again hat here. That person hasn't been approached or asked to remove the hat. So, you know, I am actually planning to ask the poll workers about that when I have a moment. Other than that, it's hard to tell. I haven't been asking people to tell me explicitly who they voted for. I've been more interested in just what brought them out today, of all days, and how they're staying safe at the polls. So, yeah, I don't have a good gauge on that right now.
Yeah, and after Carmichael, where are you headed, Sammy?
I will be going to Citrus Heights, to Citrus Heights City Hall, and then I'll be headed to the Muslim Community Center of Folsom.
Well, we look forward to hearing your reports throughout the day. And just as with Sarah and Ezra, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your reporting to check in with us.
Of course. Thanks, Randall.
All right. In just a moment, we will speak with the head of the California Voter Foundation, Kim Alexander. She joins us with last minute advice on voting, results, so much more. She can also answer your questions this morning. So if you've already voted, what do you want to know about your ballot? Are you a traditionalist and waited until today, as we just heard Sammy and the others reporting on? Tell us about that. Today is historic, and you must have thoughts about it. Shoot us an email to insight@capradio.org. Again, insight@capradio.org, or use the Twitter hashtag Ask Insight. We'll do our best to pass along your comments and questions to Kim. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we are back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio on this election day. I am your host, Randall White, and this is it. This is the last day for you to cast your ballot. If you haven't already, polls have been open since 7 this morning, and we just got through talking to our reporters in the field about the atmosphere at a few of the polling locations in the area anyway, and it sounds like in some places it's really picking up. Lines are forming. The polls will close tonight at 8 o'clock, but if you are in line at that point and have not voted yet, you're still good to go, so keep that in mind. Get in line. Here to help ensure you get your vote counted if you're an eligible voter is founder and president of the California Voter Foundation, Kim Alexander. And Kim, welcome back to Insight. It's always nice to talk with you.
Hi, Randall. Nice to talk with you, too.
So it's election day. Do you have butterflies?
A little bit, yeah. This is an exciting election. And, you know, everyone's on the edge of their seats because of the pandemic. And of course, it's a presidential election. So that always gets people extremely interested and excited. And we have a record number of registered voters in California, 22 million people registered to vote. We have same day registration. So even if you miss the deadline, you can still come out and vote today. So I'm really excited. I think, you know, for the first time, people who maybe missed that registration deadline and they're excited and they want to vote, we used to have to say, sorry, you know, can't do it. And now we have conditional registration. So there's no excuse. You know, we've got you covered here in California.
So, Kim, you founded the California Voter Foundation. Help us understand the goals of this organization.
We work to improve the voting process to better serve voters. That includes what I call proactive voters, those people who voted early, passive voters, the people who maybe are going to be in line later this afternoon, and the potential voters, the people who are eligible but not registered. And we work to improve the voting process by making it more secure, making sure vote by mail ballot system is working for voters. We just released a study last month about ballot rejection and getting the word out about how you've got to get your ballot in on time. You know, postmarks, as long as it's postmarked by election day, it will get counted. But not everybody who puts a ballot in a mailbox on election day guarantees that it's going to get postmarked today. So, you know, we really want to minimize ballot rejection and make sure people get their ballots to a safe voting location today, a voting site or a drop box rather than putting them in a mailbox today.
Yeah, speaking of ballot rejection, I was looking at the numbers that the California Secretary of State released yesterday, and more than 11 million people have already voted. Of that, about 1%, a little more than 100,000, if I looked at the numbers correctly, of ballots have been flagged. That doesn't mean they've been rejected yet, right?
That's right. Before ballots are rejected, they are challenged. And if your ballot is challenged, there are a lot of things you can do to correct it, or the technical term is cure your ballot. And your county is required to contact you under state law if you forgot to sign your envelope, or if your signature doesn't sufficiently match your signature on file. You know, people's signatures change over time. And so the advice we want to give voters is to remember to sign the envelope and to look at your driver's license or state ID and check, make your signature on your envelope look like that signature. That will help make sure that it gets verified and counted. So yeah, the voting doesn't end when the election day is over. If your ballot is in-house and received by your elections office by 8 p.m. tonight, if there's an issue with it, in the days and weeks after election day, the counties will be reaching out to voters and inviting them to submit signatures so that it can be added to their ballot and their ballot counted.
So about a week ago, I got an email saying that, and I think a text message too, that my ballot had been received. If it gets flagged, would I, since I signed up for that tracking, would I also get a notification that way that says, hey, there's a problem with your ballot?
Yeah, the ballot track system does send out a notification. So there are a couple of fail safes we have in the system. Even if you didn't sign up for ballot tracking, and we encourage voters to do that, your county does have to contact you by mail. But if you are tracking your ballot, you can actually just go online. You don't have to sign up to get notified. You can just go online and check your status, and you can verify that your ballot was received and accepted and will be counted. So you don't have to wait to get notified. You can be proactive. There have been some issues with the ballot tracking, you know, especially people who were issued more than one ballot, because some people registered to vote before the deadline, but after ballots were already prepared and sent out. And so we do have some people getting mixed messages about the status of their ballot, and that's been a little tricky to help voters sort out. So if you have questions, the best thing to do is to call your county elections office. That is the place where any voting question you have today can best be answered. If you're looking for a drop box, you're looking for your ballot status, you're not sure you're registered, you can do all that online, but you can also pick up the phone and call your county elections office, or the Secretary of State has a voter hotline at 800-345-VOTE, and voters can call there too, and you can get help from the Secretary of State staff.
800-345-VOTE. Kim, back to the ballot tracking, you know, some people are really proud of who they're voting for. They've got yard signs, they wear hats, you know, all sorts of things. Others are a little more private about who they're casting a ballot for. When it comes to the ballot tracker, can who you voted for end up becoming known in some way?
No. We have a secret ballot voting system in California. And, you know, I know some people, when they vote by mail, they're like, oh, my name's on the ballot envelope and my choices are inside. How's the privacy of my ballot maintained? And there are procedures in every elections office to ensure that after your signature is verified, your ballot envelope is opened and the ballot extracted and separated from the envelope. So once that happens, all the ballots are anonymized and mixed up together, and there's no way to track it back to an individual voter. Now, sometimes voters make mistakes on their ballots, or they sign their ballot, you know, or initial something. That's not going to get your ballot disqualified. When that happens, or if you made a wrong choice and you X'd out and you fill out a different oval, your county elections office will remake your ballot. They do this in teams of two. If there's any issue with your ballot when it comes in, something spilled on it or it got torn in the mail or whatever, they have these teams of election staff who remake those ballots. But again, it's done to maintain your ballot secrecy. And once your signature is verified, it's separated from your ballot.
Mm-hmm. One of my coworkers dropped a little bit of water or coffee or something on the barcode area of the envelope. Is that still good?
Yeah, that's still good. I mean, the barcode is there to allow your county elections office to quickly identify you in their system. But if for some reason the barcode is not readable, your name and your address is right there on the envelope as well. And so they will be able to use that information to look you up and show your ballot is received.
All right, let's talk, since it is Election Day, let's talk about voting in person today. Run down some tips for people that might be heading out the door or even maybe waiting in line right now, listening to us with AirPods or something.
Yeah, well, your correspondents had the right message today to get out and vote early. We did hear from your great reporting here on Insight that, you know, there already are some lines forming at some voting sites. I took a look at a couple of sites yesterday here in town and in Sacramento, and you know, I know they're ready. The tips I would give out are have your choices in mind before you go in and vote. You know, we have 12 propositions on the ballot. There are several local measures. There are local contests. So besides president, there are a lot of other things to vote on. And once you get inside your voting location, you want to spend as little time inside as you can, because we're in a pandemic. And so you want to minimize your any time that you spend in any interior place. So the more prepared you are to fill out your ballot quickly, the sooner you'll be able to get in and out of the voting site and let somebody else use that space to vote. You know, some people may, if they wait till the afternoon, they're more likely to face lines. You know, one of the challenges with the vote center voting model is voters can vote anywhere within their county, but we have no idea where they're going to show up, you know, and so some sites will be more popular than others. You may want to look up more than one place that you can vote. And if you drive by a place and there's a line, go to a different place. You can also, you know, if you already have your ballot, the best thing to do is fill out the ballot that you received, sign the envelope, and drop it off at a voting site rather than trying to get a new ballot and vote in person. If you're just dropping off a ballot, you don't have to wait in line. But if you do want that in-person voting experience, you certainly can have it. There's going to be social distancing. People in line are going to be 6 feet apart, you know, so that's going to make the lines look even longer than they are. But even waiting, you know, 30 or 40 minutes can feel long after a while. So you may want to bring a snack or a drink or something to read. You might want to bring a chair with you, you know, a camp chair to carry along, especially if you're going in the evening. And, you know, it may cool down tonight. So one of the things I like to remind people is we just had daylight savings and it gets dark really fast. So, you know, bring a headlamp with you. All these sites will be well lit, but it may be dark on the street. It may be dark wherever you're parking. I remember I was at Colonial Heights Library in March, and they were having some problems connecting with the statewide database, and people were waiting in line for, it felt like them, you know, a long time. And I remember the parking lot being, you know, pretty full and feeling a little guilty that I was taking up a space in order to do some election observing. But it was very helpful to talk to those voters. And I asked them, you know, what did you get a ballot? You know, what happened to the ballot that was mailed to you? Because everybody in Sacramento got ballots in March. And they said, you know, they left it at home or they forgot it or they lost it. And so, you know, if that happens, you can certainly still go and vote today. Don't let, you know, misplaced ballot keep you from voting, even though you were issued one and you didn't turn it in. You do need to go to a voting site, though, and vote in person in order to vote if you lost your ballot.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, you mentioned Colonial Heights. We had some reporting from there, and a line is already forming. We had a really long line next to the station here on the Sac State campus a couple of years ago, but I don't think that's going to happen this time around because there just aren't the number of students and staff on campus as there has been in previous years because of the pandemic. And with the pandemic in mind, the in-person voting system is safe right now for people to cast their ballots should they want to take that route?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is going to be tricky if someone shows up at a voting site and insists on not wearing a mask. They may need to clear out that site of other voters or sequester that voter somewhere to let them vote their ballot, or they may be printed out a ballot and given it to fill out outside, something like that. So there will be, you know, efforts made to protect voters at voting sites in that kind of a situation. But in terms of the election staff, what I saw yesterday when I visited the Bell Coolidge Library and also the Pinnell Meadowview Center was that the staff were ready and prepared and cleaning every single booth in between voters. So that's going to slow things down as well when every time somebody leaves the voting site, it's got to be cleaned out for the next person. So that's going to take some patience. People were being sent home with their pens. No pens were getting reused. So you get a bonus pen when you go and vote in person today. You know, the other advice is I'd like to give out to your listeners, our community, is to be patient and to be kind to the election staff. I mean, patience. They are going to have a super long day today. They're working under very challenging conditions. People were in really good spirits yesterday, but, you know, it can be really hard on election day itself. So, you know, we want to be supportive of them.
Kim Alexander, founder and president of the California Voter Foundation, thank you so much for your insight today. That comes in very handy.
Thanks, Randall. Anytime.
Also, if you're a voter in Washoe County, the county does have an app you can download and check the wait times at the various polling locations. Well, that's insight for this morning. Election coverage throughout the day. Thank you so much for joining us here on CAP Radio.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.